Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast, park fans. We're a podcast for theme park fans, and we're here every week talking about things in the theme park industry. I'm Bex, this is Kev.
Hi, everyone.
And this week we're joined by Robbie from Catapult. Now, you might remember Catapult. We spoke to a couple of the guys there last year on our episode about dark rides, which was fascinating, and their experience working with Disney and Universal, and it was just amazing. If you haven't heard that episode, go back and seek it out. But if you don't know, Catapult are a company who work in the attractions industry, and they're based right here in Derby, just down the road from you, Kev, really.
Yep.
Not far at all. And they're doing some amazing things, some amazing work with immersive attractions. The scope of what they do is actually really wide. And Robbie, you join us, and you're the Insights Director. So you do a lot of the research which goes behind the projects that you're working on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me on. It's great to be here. Yeah, I started, and this is going to come around to my job title in a minute, but my first love of theme parks was Roller Coaster Tycoon, the game. That's the, you know, the epiphany of gaming for me was that game. I spent so many hours on that, and it was really out of that that sort of the theme park and the thought that goes into it, and, you know, the commercial aspect and how do you make people happy. They're the big things that sort of stayed with me in terms of, it'd be amazing if I could do this as a career. And then, you know, randomly things happen and you end up doing exactly what you were doing 30 years ago. It's just not on a Windows 95 computer playing Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Yes. Did you realise it was very different?
Very, very different. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So, but yeah, you know, that's the embodiment of what that game is pretty much what I'm doing now, you know, supporting our design team when it comes to master planning theme parks, creating and designing attractions, but really thinking about what's needed from a commercial perspective. Obviously, operators want to make money, so we've got to make sure that it pays its way. But how can we make the best guest experience? You know, what is it that super fans of IPs absolutely need to have in their attraction? Who are they visiting with? Is it family? Is it friends? Is it a couple? You know, things like that can fundamentally change the experiences that we all have within attractions. So yeah, a lot of research required to do that, a lot of looking into deep levels of psychology models and that sort of thing, but I absolutely love it, and I absolutely love this industry.
It's actually really fascinating because, you know, as fans, we often have these grand ideas of what we would do if we were running a theme park and all of these like creative concepts that we might bring in and what we should see. But I suppose it is really important to remember that humans tend to act in a certain way over and over again. So that's why the research is so important, because as much as you as an individual might think, oh, this would be amazing, if the majority of people don't share that view, then it's not going to work, is it?
Absolutely not. And, you know, something we always talk about, if we take IPs as a great example, is that, you know, not everyone is a super fan of an IP, you know, if it's in a theme park. You have those deep divers who know a movie franchise from back to front, but you also have the toe dippers as well that have maybe just seen, you know, one episode of a TV show. And they need to have just as great an experience as those that, you know, love things like 100%. So yeah, there's a varying degree of what guests want out of their experience. Absolutely.
You did a big project last year, and this is one of the reasons that I want to get you on today. You did a big research project, which was targeted at theme park fans. Us, nerds, enthusiasts, whatever you want to call us, which is not, do you know what? I was really pleased that actually you wanted our opinions on stuff, because we often get lambasted for having many opinions and not necessarily well-placed ones.
Yeah.
But I've always argued that as much as we might gob off about stuff and as much as we're not always right, we genuinely care about theme parks. We love them. We've often visited them for years and years and years. We've seen them through peaks and troughs. We've seen good things. We've seen bad things. And we really know what we love and what doesn't work. And we're not experts. And we obviously most of the time don't work in the attractions industry, but we do see things from a guest point of view. So I've always thought there's some value in that. Clearly you guys thought there was some value in that. And you did a big survey and you asked us what we thought. So is that the reason why you wanted to speak to us?
Yeah, that's my ego. No, I absolutely. So, I mean, you know, for me, when it comes to particularly the insights thing, the 80-20 rule comes into play so often. And it's just the same with trying to get the opinions, the thoughts, the feelings, but also the actions of what guests do, whether it's a theme park or whether it's a museum. And the 80% in the middle who enjoy the experience, that's great. They won't necessarily engage on a opinion-based level, so it's very hard to distinguish what they want from an experience. But for all of those one-star ratings on TripAdvisor that some guests leave that give quite bespoke criticism, either to, you know, an interactive that didn't work, or the queue lines were too big, or there was a member of staff that they felt aggrieved about, there's the five-star super fans that absolutely love and breathe these places, that have actually got validity to listen to as well. So what we wanted to do with this research is kind of go, we can't just listen to the one stars all the time. We've got to listen to the five stars. And not just that, but also people that are acutely aware of what a theme park should be and how it should run, which is you guys. You know, you arguably have the same, if not more, information than we do in some cases. So why would we not lean on that amazing expertise that you have to really dig into, you know, what makes the most amazing experience? And yeah, so last year we went to a select group of theme park super fans. We asked them to fill out a survey of various things. It was almost like a cathartic sort of response for quite a few people.
Oh, really?
Divulging, you know, when you give sort of like, you know, a 50 character length response within a survey, there was a lot of people that were mid-sentence and it just cut off.
And another thing.
Yes. How much space have you got?
Yes, absolutely. But what we gained out of that is so much engagement in terms of what really matters to people. And the big thing that came out of the research, you know, without trying to summarize it too much, is that a theme park visit comes down to meaning. It comes down to the reason why people go there in the first place. Now, that could be for a multitude of different things. But by and large, it came down to a guilty parent wanting to take their kids somewhere because they've not spent time with them for a long time. It could be because they want to feel like a kid again, and they want to relive the coasters that they absolutely love. Or they're trying to escape something in the world that they really don't like. You know, we're starting to go quite philosophical.
Something that we've talked about.
That's the three things, you know, that's the three things that kind of come up time and time again. So, you know, this is why people go to theme parks. This is why they want immersion. They want guilt-free entertainment and feeling like they're doing something good in the world. So really, really interesting.
It's interesting, isn't it, for you to know the difference. Well, what is it that makes people like ourselves have to return again? Even if it's been 2 months, I've not been to this park for 2 months. It's been way too long. I must go back again. Like, I'm interested to know, like, what people's responses are on that side of it.
Yeah, do you know what? That's a really good point, because if you was to look at the cold hard data of, oh, we're getting people come time and time again, we must have loyal fans, or maybe they've got a membership and they're just trying to get great value for money. That's typically the summary that you could take from the data. But actually, one of the things that's starting to come to the fore is it's almost like society's comfort blanket of doing the same thing time and time again. It's just the same with digital content, Netflix, iPlayer, whatever you're watching. There's such a huge surge in nostalgic content. Strange Things is like the epitome of nostalgic content that, you know, harks back to the 80s. And the reason why that landed so well post-COVID was that we needed a comfort blanket. We needed something that gave us something that we knew, something that we have some preconceptual ideas of already, and therefore felt comfortable consuming. Theme parks are exactly the same. If guests are going back time and time again, they're trying to relive something that they did before, which gave them a happy experience. And you could say that for pretty much everything. You could say that if you went to the theatre, if you go back to the same holiday resort time and time again. It's that recollection of happy memories. Really interesting when you start to dig into the psychology. Basically, it's down to safety.
So they feel like a safe place. They feel like a known quantity. And you do get mainly enthusiasts sometimes saying whether it's Disney or Alton Towers, you walk through the gates and you feel like you're home. And that is a comment that we hear a lot. Is that what you found when you did the survey?
Absolutely. It's like so if it's not about escapism, then it's about returning to their ideal world or what they think the ideal world should be, albeit with very expensive food prices. You could even you could replicate the way that we decorate a room in our homes. It's pretty much the same as finding out there's a new ride or there's been an enhancement to a certain area. There's an element of curiosity where you go, oh, something's changed. I want to figure out what it is. Let's see what all the new decorations are. By and large, it's coming back to a place where they feel safe and they can, relive that enjoyment.
So, like a good example of that for me recently, I know people are probably really bored of hearing about Alton Towers opening days, but like it didn't have a great opening day, right? But what is it that 5 days later it went back again? And if it was not a good day, and you've seen it all over social media and the internet about, it obviously operations this and this and this is going wrong. Why are we going back again? That's why it's interesting. It's this homely thing. It's this comfort. This thing that although you might not have had a great day, but as an enthusiast, there's something about going back again and going on Nemesis again, even though you waited an hour the other day and it was like kept breaking down. Do you see what I mean? It's like
Sound like you're
why.
talking from experience
Well, I didn't want to bring up Towers opening day because I know, like I say, people are sick and tired of probably hearing about it. But that was what's going through my head when I think about obviously what you were just saying then, Robbie.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? It's the drama of it as well, isn't it? We're not in the 90s now where everyone watches EastEnders in the UK or Coronation Street and
That's a really good point.
or Friends. We're not doing that now. Our ways to kind of divulge in community are quite segmented. And the theme park industry and the theme park super fans, nerds, geeks, whatever we want to call ourselves, are exactly the same. This is our drama. Things not working, things not right, but it doesn't stop us from watching it. It doesn't stop us from visiting. We love being involved in a drama.
It's all the drama, Mick. I love it. Is there anything else that you were sort of asking in this survey that you can sort of share with us that was quite interesting?
Yeah, of course. So, something we did do, anyone can look on our website and see, we did like a top 10 things that make guests unhappy. So we asked as part of the survey to say, what are the things that really gripe you? There'll be no surprise that wait times, value for money came out as the top two things that people felt most aggrieved by, and that's completely understandable. But one of the areas where it half surprised us how high ranked up the top 10 list was both cleanliness and a lack of public amenities in that way, in bins, benches, parasols in sunny parks, that sort of thing. So they ranked third and fourth, so really high up. And from our perspective as designers and wanting to create the best guest experience, we already knew that those little bits in between the rides are really important. They're really important from an operational perspective because you want to keep people moving. You don't want it to feel too crowded, but at the same time, you want it to feel ambient, so you don't want it too empty. But the need to have just great places to sit down are fundamental. pram parking areas, bins that aren't overflowing, bees in summertime and wasps hanging around your orange Fanta or your coat. It's all of these things that actually they seem so small in the context of a day out at a theme park, but they could absolutely be the killer of the day. You know, yeah, I can certainly recollect a visit when I was sort of like 8 or 9 of probably a great day out at Alton Towers. I can't quite remember much other than being stung by a wasp, you know. So you know, I think I had a good time, but that was the lasting impression. And you know, design for us is all about trying to minimize all those areas of friction and making sure that that immersion from ride to ride and that that nice beautiful guest flow in hopefully a very sunny day is an amazing one, and not brought down by litter on the path. And it seems like such a simple thing, but clearly for enthusiasts, it's a big deal as well. It's a real mood killer.
Just focusing mainly on UK parks, or is it just a general parks anywhere that they've been to visit?
So we submitted it globally, but the majority of the respondents were UK, but the main was North America.
Right.
Yeah. So North America, we had, there's probably about 45% of respondents were from North America. So, you know, we're dealing with people that are going to the biggest and the best parks in the world, as well as lots of regional ones. So it's interesting to see that it was just as much of an issue there as it was here in the UK.
Did you generally find that with responses that our UK responses were in line with the US responses, or is there a bit of a disparity where we rank or rate certain things?
Yeah, it was pretty much the same. I think, you know, there's always a bit more moodiness with the UK market, you know. There's always something to talk down, what? Isn't there? There's you know, it genuinely was the case that, you know, the North American audience were more likely to give 10 out of 10 for something than the UK market. But that shouldn't surprise you, should it?
Very hard to please. If you get a 10 from a UK theme park enthusiast, then you're absolutely onto a winner. I mean, I can't even imagine what that attraction would have to be like to get a 10, to get a no faults, like absolutely no notes.
Yeah. It was an amazing ride. Theme is brilliant. I got stung by a wasp. So that's 9.
How did theming sort of rank? Was, because you've mentioned obviously queue times and value for money, things like benches and bins and wasps. Surely we place quite a lot of emphasis on how something looks and is themed.
Yeah, that was a really interesting outcome to the survey, in that it was important, but not as important as the things I've just mentioned. And I don't think that sends a message around, oh, immersion isn't important. I think for super fans, it's just an expectation that it's going to be really great, and if it's not, then they're going to really talk about it. So I think you know, the fact that it kind of came middle of the league table, if you like, kind of shows that people were fairly happy with the immersion. But obviously we always want more, don't we? We always want to feel even more integrated into whatever the story is.
And when you talked about queue lines, obviously that is something that ranks highly. It's going to rank highly amongst enthusiasts and the general public. Nobody wants to be waiting in a queue. Let's face it, it is the worst thing about theme parks. Was there anything that came out of that that you could take as attraction designers to go, okay, this is how we can improve that for people? We can't take away wait times, but this is coming out as something that we could do to make it better.
Yeah, there was a couple of things, actually. First of all, and this is quite short and sharp, it's worse to have no queue whatsoever than it is to have a full queue, because the preconception was, what's wrong with that? or is it not open? I don't want to fool myself by going to the front and realizing it's not open. There's an element of sort of psychology there where people were like, I don't trust it until other people go on it, sort of thing, particularly if it's been closed. So that was fascinating. I thought people would just run, just like I do, but maybe I'm more of a risk taker. So that was interesting. But something that keeps cropping up, and it's not just queue lines that we're starting to see from our perspective, and it sounds really basic, but it's human connection. Something that we're seeing within queue lines is there's some great interaction, interactive sometime, and that helps, to keep people entertained. But for 90% of people that are within the queue, the mobile phone comes out immediately, and that cuts immersion. It doesn't just cut immersion, it cuts the whole reason why we went in the first place, which is what I referenced at the start, which is to be with the people that we've kind of missed or we feel guilty about not doing more with. A mobile phone in terms of entertainment has its place. I am not condoning anyone for using a mobile phone. But if you was to zoom out of that queue line that you're in sometimes, and you realize that the majority of adults are looking at a mobile phone while the kids are kind of twiddling their thumbs, is that what we really want? Not just in a theme park context, in a queue line context, but also like a bit society as well, almost. Where is that connection? What can we do within queue lines and other attractions to kind of boost that, touching hands or looking each other in the eye or talking with strangers, what's it really take to get there? It's been around a while, but one of the best examples of this is probably the runaway train, the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, in Disney in Orlando. There's so many interactives there that they cause curiosity within the group, and people can't help but get involved with strangers. And to this day, it still does that. And to this day, you will see less people with mobile phones in their hands. I don't know, checking scores. Maybe they're checking the wait times for the rides. I don't
Yeah,
know.
probably.
But yeah, I think that is something where there isn't a really easy solve for it, because it's about consumer behavior. It's about changing the way that people behave within parks. It's becoming more and more an emphasis for us as designers in terms of what can we bring into the environment to change that, because we know out the back of that, people will have greater experience. They feel more considerate, more love towards the people that they're with. And ultimately, they'll enjoy the ride more too. So, getting away from those screens, getting people involved with one another is something that we're trying to implement.
I've noticed on some rides now for the younger children, they've started incorporating play areas. Is that something that you've seen as well within the work? Like for the younger children, there's little play areas that they can play in while the queue's going along, and then they can carry on. I've noticed they've started doing it with, they're putting the Bluey coaster at Alton Towers. They've done like a little play area section that they can play in. Is that something that you might look at doing?
Yeah, absolutely. There's certainly quick wins for kiddie coasters and family rides where we can, start to bring in more play aspects. And to be honest, they're quite widely used. There's always sort of like a marble turning circle, or this, a little puzzle game that, small kids can play, and they're great. Thinking slightly broader than that, something that we have seen, whether it's a mainstream thing or not, we're not quite sure, but we are seeing more of a need for theme parks to look at a bigger quantity of rides in order to have lower queue times, in order to have more experiences. But obviously, it's like Rome, you build it and they'll come. You'll probably end up with more people in the park. But it's interesting to see that people are starting to play with the idea of having more rides in order to have a greater capacity and therefore a lesser queue line too. So interesting to see whether how that develops over the next few years.
That is the ultimate goal for us, I think, as fans. It's something we always want to see, a park that is jam-packed as much as possible with attractions. Although you can't obviously go from 0 to 100 in a day, like you say, it's a process. The one
Absolutely.
thing about the sort of marble attract, things in the queue line that you mentioned, as someone with a young daughter, I've always found them a bit odd, because if a queue's moving, you don't get a chance to like kind of stop them. So it's almost like you need a continuous moving queue, which you get more with attractions now, which have like conveyor belt style loading and high throughputs, but something that a kid or a family in a queue can take with them as they move through the queue, rather than something as if they're stood in one spot for a long time, which ideally you don't want to be. I think that would be quite interesting, and totally get getting off phones and getting away from screens. But also, is there a way that actually you could utilize them? I don't know, because we've got our phones with us. That is the, you know, there's no doubt about that. No one's going to be leaving them in the car anytime soon.
Is there
a way of embracing it rather than fighting it? And I think that'll be really interesting to see sort of where theme park design goes.
Yeah, it is a source of entertainment, so we can't begrudge it. We just know that it's something that can break the reason why people come in the first place. I know there have been trials in terms of, you know, like games or, you know, ride-based games that people can play and that sort of stuff. It's not necessarily caught on widely around the world, so it's something not quite there. But I completely agree, you know, for the right ride, especially if we're talking about kids, you know, what would be utopia in terms of a queue line? If they're going to be there for 30 minutes, which is hard enough, with, you know, a child under the age of 5, I know that all too well. You know, what is it? What is that take long where you can, I don't know, you know, build something even better the further you go into the queue line, or it's the start of the story that then it's the finale of the ride. And, you know, there's so much that can be done from that perspective. It's just making sure it's the right ride with the right IP and the right story being told.
Yeah,
definitely. Definitely.
Anything else in the survey that you've taken away as a something you didn't expect, or something unusual, or something that you think would be interesting to share?
I think parking.
Is okay.
Yes.
Oh no. How long have we got?
Oh no.
I think it's more broader than parking. It's just parking gets the gripe more than anything. So something we look at quite often within theme park design is the primacy and recency effect. The fact that when you leave somewhere, you're more likely to remember the first thing you see and the last thing you see, and that forms your memory. So if your first memory is walking into the park entrance and it's stunning, massive thumbs up. If the last thing you do is paying for parking, especially if you thought it was going to be like, you know, £5 and not more than that.
Yeah.
So that, and likewise, you know, with some of the bigger parks, you're hot, you're sweaty, you've had a full day at a theme park, you just want to get back home, and you're waiting ages for a monorail to come along. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same thing. So again, it's really interesting that as designers, we have to look outside the theme park as well as inside it as well. We need to think about protecting the memories that we've helped to create from an immersive perspective inside, and make sure that even that journey home is going to be as best as it possibly could.
Yeah.
Which is really strange. You know, it's like curating a night out for your friends at a restaurant and then making sure their Uber home is perfect. It's really, really odd. But that's the sort of thing where we have to think about how can we take away the friction, but also how can we make sure that magic isn't lost, whether that's the walk to the car park or, you know, the monorail back to the hotel.
Yeah. It's so interesting to hear you say that that is actually like a recognised phenomenon, that what you see first and what you see last can really impact your day, because it's something that we probably all have in the back of our mind. We know that first impressions count, but I've never really thought about last impressions and how that can change how you feel. And if you've, I guess it only really matters if you're on the cusp, if you've had a day which has been okay, that end bit is either going to make it or break it for you. And it's either going to send you over the edge or go, do you know what? That was fine. Like, fine. It's been okay.
Absolutely. If your fingers are hovering over the trip advisory, the chances are you're going to score it lower than higher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not every park can do an amazing, spectacular fireworks show at the end of the day. So you've seen that and you go, wow, that was amazing. That's your lasting impression at the end of the day. You've seen, not every park can do that to end your day. So,
yeah. Absolutely not.
But really interesting that for parks to think about that, I think, as a, how do, okay, we know how guests enter, but how do guests leave us? What do we leave them with? How do we make them go away with a warm, fuzzy feeling? I think that's actually really fascinating and really interesting because there often is a grand entrance, or there's a rope cutting at the start, or a big ceremony and, oh, welcome, we're going to have an amazing day. And no one really thinks about the end. So, yeah, that's fascinating.
It is interesting, isn't it? I was just wondering, Robbie, as well, is this information available to parks? Or is it just for Catapult as your own research? But would this be something you could share to other theme parks to give them a bit of an insider into our way of thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all of the insights that we do, we publish on our website. The big thing is for us is for leveraging the whole of the industry. You know, if we get some design work out the back of it, amazing. But the one thing we want to do is leverage the experiences that we have. You know, we love making great guest experiences. And if we look, you know, very much at home, the UK market is going to go through a huge transformation over the next 5, 10, 15 years. And there's an element of, you know, benchmark attractions, meaning that everyone else needs to step up slightly. So the research is there for those that want to, you know, improve their attractions, but also improve them in line with what the guest expectation is too.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's so good to know that you've actually gone out and got those opinions. Is there anything that you've seen where theme park super fans, enthusiasts, nerds seem to fall out of line with the general public? Or are we quite representative, actually?
I think, well, this is kind of a double-edged sword, but the minute detail that super fans go into in terms of the design aspect is really interesting. So being able to pick up on those Easter eggs that us as designers love to put into things like queue lines and rides, you know, we don't just do it for ourselves. We're doing it for you guys as well. And we absolutely love, you know, adding in those moments of magic where only the real fans will really know exactly what it means.
And then you look even more nerdy because you go, oh my goodness, look at that. And no one else knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think that's the area, but that's us kind of like talking to our peers, you know, putting things like that into our design. So that's the only part where it's like, for those super fans, we're talking the same conversation, really.
Yeah.
For those that typically go to the theme park and it's all about the rides and the enjoyment and the experience, maybe they won't see those. And that's absolutely fine. But yeah, just in that element of Easter eggs, like,
We do that. Like it.
Yeah.
We're always looking for it. We always want to be the first one to spot it as well. I've heard that there's a really cool one in the new Disney Adventure World because the Imagineer who's done a lot of work on that used to work at Efteling. So he's put in some little Efteling characters sort of dotted around, like the Pardo's mascot is up on a shelf in one of the shops. And it's a jester, but it's very clearly like modeled on the Efteling jester and things like that, and it is like
looking for that. Definitely
no one else is gonna know or care, but he knows and we know, and it is like a little like wink of the eye to each other, I think. It's really cool. Okay, that's really fascinating. I know that you're about to embark on a new research project, which is slightly different, but still you are looking for theme park fans to come and get involved in this, but this is specifically for neurodivergent theme park fans.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've started a PhD project with Drayton Manor, the University of Birmingham, and we've appointed a PhD researcher in Hayley, who's just amazing. And what we're looking to do is improve themed attractions that includes theme parks for neurodivergent guests. Our starting point was that 1 in 5 people around the world are neurodivergent in some way, shape or form. Whether they know it or not, is sort of a period of time we're in at the minute where people are looking to get diagnosed for maybe preconditions that they never thought was associated with the neurodivergence. But what it means is for 1 in 5 people that are going through the gates of a theme park, there could be a lack of amenities for what they necessarily want or what's going to make the greatest guest experience. So we're doing a 4-year study. We need to go deep into this. And the reason why is because there is been lots of different initiatives done around the world in fits and starts. There's some amazing ideas. There's some on par ideas. There's some ideas that could do a little bit better. But there isn't a blanket blueprint in terms of what the industry should be doing, the standard. And we don't think that's right. We think we need to have something that leverages the whole of the experience for neurodivergent guests. So it's a big old study. We're in collection phase right now. So it's opinions. It's looking at examples within other markets in other countries, how the perception of neurodivergence across the world as well slightly changes. In the UK, we're very on the front foot, shall we say, compared to other countries. So how does that differ? But the idea being that, yes, we'll have this blueprint in 4 years' time where we'd release it to the world for them to go, this is the right way to go about making sure you're creating an amazing place for neurodivergent community.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that encompasses everything that you'll find at Attraction. So maybe how the queue line can be modified or made accessible for a neurodivergent guest whilst having an option for a non-neurodivergent guest who maybe can, you know, take a few more sounds and lights and surprises and things like that, or even the just the general park environment, how that can be made more friendly towards people who do have a neurodivergent condition. It's not going to be just one element, I guess.
No, and this is, you know, this is something that needs unpicking, but also there's that level of education as well. You know, we are, the whole global population is neurodiverse. You know,
yeah.
we have different, you know, requirements from that perspective, or different things that make us excited or really anxious. And one thing I would say is that we've been looking at inclusive design quite a lot at Catapult. From a physical disability perspective, if we make changes in the park, which include things like ramps and bigger and better toilets, well, they are great for everybody.
Mm.
Like literally, everyone's going to use a ramp instead of steps. Everyone wants like a decent toilet that has a bigger space, particularly if you're, you know, carrying kids as well. So we feel the same about this from a neurodivergent perspective, is that if we can include things that give people a sense of agency over what their experience is within the park, then that means that they're going to leave with a greater, memory of what it was. And again, something that we want to really push within our communications about this project is, just because a guest may be neurodivergent, it doesn't mean that they need things toning down. Sometimes it's about toning things up. You know, there may be a neurodivergent guest that absolutely loves spinning around, in which case they do want to go on the carousel for 4 hours, as a very rudimentary example.
Yeah.
Whereas in reality, we might go, no, don't go on it for that long. You know, that's probably, whoa. This is their decision. This is what they want. And it's exactly the same for noise, for the smells of places, for what people see, for how close we are to people. As well, you know, that's a big thing, especially with autism. You know, there can be some sensory overload requirements when you're very compact and it's a very crowded environment.
Yeah,
but none of us like crowded environments. Yeah, you know, who likes a crowded? Who wants to be in a crowded queue line? Well, no one.
Yeah.
So if we can look into the research, find out from a neurodivergence perspective how we can make these public spaces better for everyone, then everyone's going to benefit. And that's like the greatest heartwarming thing that we're really looking to look to do and launch in the next 4 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's such a good point. I mean, we as enthusiasts will moan about a cattle pen queue line with the rest of them. Like, everyone hates it. It's the worst kind of queue line to be exposed to. So yeah, if you can go with some research and say, hey, nobody wants this, and I know it's cheap and I know it's the most space saving way to do it, but this is the experience your guests are going to get, and they're going to report on that, and they're going to give you the negatives. Why don't you do it like this instead? I think any park would be crazy not to take you seriously on that and go, okay, well, these guys actually have got the research to back it up, and it shows. And like you say, it's not just going to benefit, neurodivergent guests is going to benefit all of us.
Absolutely.
I'd love to be in a nice, open, maybe winding, gradually queue line with things to look at along the way. And yeah.
Would you remember during the whole COVID kind of time when we had the 2 meter? I really enjoyed queuing. Because you had a 2 meter gap between the people in front of you and behind you. So you could queue without feeling like you're squashed in.
Yeah.
And actually, I think it's a really good point, because I think a lot of times we focus on the young children's areas where we do this sort of stuff. But actually, I think it's good when we're developing new roller coasters and other attractions for all ages that we're taking this idea on board and trying to incorporate it into that as well, rather than we just think in CBeebies Land or in Thomas Land, this is where we're focusing it on. What about when we're creating all this future rides and attractions that are for all ages? I think it's really good what you're doing.
Yeah, we're really, really proud to be working, in cahoot with the university, from an education perspective and research perspective. It's great, but also with Drayton Manor as well. We've got real life feedback, and that's what we'll be doing over the 4 year study is, maybe trialing a few things in a very small scale to see how they operate. And it's something that we have highlighted as well. And this is a very small part of the research project, but there is a slight commercial benefit as well for parks that kind of take neurodivergence with more seriousness. And that's the fact that maybe in a group of, a family of five, for example, if one of the child is neurodivergent, the chances are that they're all not going to go because they don't want to miss out on an experience together. So if we can make a safe space for that neurodivergent child or even that parent, we are alleviating the pressure that they're going to feel in terms of, navigating a space that's busy and, full of the smell of candy floss and really loud and everything else. But also it unlocks an additional 5 tickets worth of revenue.
Yeah.
So, there is a real, commercial benefit as well as, the societal benefit as well, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And Hayley, who did the episode with me about the ride access pass and her experience with a child with autism, made exactly that point. Like, she will end up having to make a decision as to where she can visit and where she just can't, because it's just going to end up as a nightmare for her. Anyone who takes this stuff seriously, I think, will very quickly be appreciated by that community, and word will spread. You say a small commercial benefit. I actually think there could be a huge commercial benefit to it. So I think it's going to be fascinating. I know you're looking for people to take part in the research. I will put a link to that in this episode description. And it's a 4 year project, so we're not going to see anything super quickly, but maybe we will start seeing some small trials, like you say, come in, and it'll be fascinating to see what results you get out of this. So I really hope you can keep us updated, and we can follow this through with you.
Absolutely, it'd be a pleasure.
One of the many things that you're doing as Catapult, which I know you always have so much got on the go and so many projects, and you're behind so much stuff that sometimes we don't realize you're behind, but I know that you keep everyone updated on your website as well with the stuff that you're working on, so it's always worth having a look on there. Thank you so much for coming and sharing all of this with us. I think it's been really interesting to hear what other theme park fans have to say, because it makes me feel a little bit less alone. It's not just me who thinks that.
Not just us.
But before you go, I have one more question for you. Just gotta ride it. I do this every time we have a new guest on the podcast. It's called Just Gotta Ride It, and I'm going to put you in the position where, if you can imagine a world where every roller coaster is about to be destroyed and you could only save one, which one are you going to save and why are you going to save it?
Easy. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, not even a second to think.
Yeah, it was just the most stunning experience. It was the first time I'd ridden it in November last year, and I went with my friend and colleague George, and it was just the most amazing ride. It was made even more amazing by the soundtrack. So for those that have been on it, I think there's a choice of seven or eight songs, maybe. I had Gloria Estefan, Conga, which was just the most baffling experience to have. But you know, I've listened to that song probably about 100 times since November because it's just the epitome. I am back in that ride again, you know? So the mix of like the company and the music and just the sheer fun was amazing. And not that I want to give away the secret, but I did get to the right car to have the best experience within there. So yeah,
Nice.
There you
it's
go.
really
There's
amazing and
a
saving
nod. I still
that.
haven't ridden it, so I will look forward to it because I've heard so many people say the same thing. Although it's usually September that gets talked about as like the song to get for some reason. Everyone wants September,
Oh
but hey, Gloria,
I'm
great.
pure I'm pure Gloria Estefan. I don't care what I listen to next.
I
It's
can get
just
on
her.
board with
That's
that.
it now. You've stuck with that song now. So every time you go on Guardians, you're gonna have to just, no, I can't have anything else. It's got to be that
Absolutely.
song.
And it neatly brings us back to what we started with. So you had that experience on that ride with that song, and now every time you hear that song, it reminds you of that park, and that just shows you how ingrained these park experiences and how emotional they can make us and how they can connect our head and our heart, which is amazing. And it's why we love them. It's why we are theme park fans.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Robbie, thank you so much for joining us. If you want to find out more about Catapult, it's Catapult with a K, and I will put a link to that in this episode description. If you haven't already, hit subscribe. It means you never miss an episode when we release a new one. And if you want to leave us a review, you can do that as well. For now, though, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.